Ladies and gentlemen, once again, back is the incredible, and by incredible, I mean this podcast, Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans, joined, as always, by myself. We've got Mark Abbott, Denise Tapscott, Kirk Johnson, I'm Stephen Van Patten, and we have a surprise guest. Well, maybe not so much a surprise guest. We might have hinted at it. But anyway, Robert P. Atone, we'll figure out what the P stands for, is the Bram Stoker Award-nominated author of The Triangle. His other works include Her Infernal Name and Other Nightmares. And was that an honorable mention, the Best Horror of the Year, Volume 13, as well as the Suburban horror novel, The Vile Thing We Created, which is very well reviewed. Ladies and gentlemen, for the first time on Beef, Wine, Shenanigans, Rob Atone.
Oh, hello.
Yay.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you guys for having me.
So, Rob, we've hung out a few times.
Yeah.
We've had a few drinks, we'll clink up here and there.
Yes.
But do we really know you?
Ooh, wow. Perhaps not. Perhaps not.
Well, we're going to fix that tonight.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm into
it. Because the first thing we're going to ask is the same thing everybody asks the four of us. How and why did you become a horror writer?
Yeah. I think because I needed so my dad passed away in 2019. I needed an outlet to go along with the traditional therapy to kind of like get my, you know, feelings out, thoughts out, all of that stuff. And I turned to writing horror. That was really kind of one of the main things that saved me. I always like put like, cause I was ready to like wrap it up at that point. But like three things really kind of pulled me back, and it was my wife, my therapist, and writing. And like all three of those things combined really made the biggest impact. But like I had always been a huge horror fan because of my dad. His favorite movie was Jaws. We live on an island. So like I still don't want to go to the beach and don't want to go in the water. fuck that. another one. Yeah, like yeah. I just don't like we were always Halloween kids. I was always a monster kid growing up. I'm actually writing something now that has like the most like biographical character of me in it. And it's like a middle grade horror thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh man, this kid is me. Like this little dork. I love him. But yeah, so that's think that's why horror. Cause like, you know, I guess I could write a family drama or something like that. Or I could write like, you know, about my feelings and all that, but I'd rather write about my feelings as a ghost.
Right.
Ah, yeah. Yeah.
Write about my feelings. That makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
Feelings. Who needs them?
I guess that's the thing, right? It's like you want to express your feelings, but you don't necessarily want people to know they're your feelings.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. You know, and I think more like when you read like an autobiographical thing or like personal essays or something like that, it's so much more how that person is feeling. I'd rather it be more of a broad kind of thing. And also I want it to be entertaining too. Cause at the end of the day, the job is to make people forget. You know, I mentioned to you SVP that I was listening to the May 11th podcast today. And all I could think about while you guys were talking was like, yeah, this is exactly why we write horror, because the real world is so much more awful than anything. Like if we can take somebody's mind off that for like an hour or whatever, then we've done our job. And like, that's kind of the, you know, we can still talk about real stuff, but if we can entertain at the same time, like that's the key.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's funny you phrase it like that, because Mark and I, a few years ago, we actually participated in a panel that basically explored how horror writers are supposed to scare people in the face of the Trump presidency.
Yeah.
I wish
we could have seen that. Is that anywhere? Is that recorded anywhere?
I don't know. We didn't record that, did we?
No, I don't think so.
Unfortunately, no.
No.
But it was, I mean, it was one of those panels where it's like you threw a bunch of ideas and theories around, and then at the end of the day, it's kind of like, yeah, well, like it like the end was just kind of, there wasn't a real answer.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like one of those, you know, like one of those Miss Universe questions where, you know, how do you solve world peace or, you know, whatever the fuck. And it's, you know, the answer is not forthcoming in that situation.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like that's how the night kind of went, unfortunately.
But I mean, didn't George Romero say something about, like, you know, in times of strife, like we always get the best horror during the most difficult political times. And we got a lot of really good stuff while that piece of shit was president. You know, like there was a lot of good content that came out during his time. And especially a lot of the, in my opinion, like a lot of the best horror came out streaming at that time. A lot of, like a lot of those like Blumhouse Presents things that were on like Hulu and Amazon. That stuff was ridiculous. Right.
Didn't Hereditary come out during that time too? Hereditary and like
I think Hereditary was 2016. Like So I don't know. Like he's a horrible monster, but we got some horrible monsters out of it.
A good point. It's kind of like how we got really good hip hop during the Reagan years.
And really good horror. Yeah, really good horror during the Nixon years.
Yeah.
Word.
Now that you mentioned it. A lot of that stuff from the 70s still holds water.
Wait, now I'm thinking about it. We got some great monster movies during the Ike years.
Yep.
100%.
Them came out, Tarantula.
Godzilla, you know, Robert, what's funny about it is, so I had sent these guys a meme. Somebody had taken a meme from Jaws and had during the COVID bit. And it was that it was the mayor was Trump. Jaws was COVID-19. Dreyfus was Dr. Fauci. And
Roy Scheider
was the governor, Cuomo.
Yeah.
And the only person missing was Quint.
Yeah.
And I think decided that Quint was everybody else that was getting fed up with the way it was at, because it was one of those things I remember as a kid watching that movie with my father and going, why is the mayor not listening to the scientists and the cop? And my father was just like, because they're idiot, because he's an idiot. And I wonder if he had lived long enough to see the pandemic, he would have just been like,
you know, my dad passed in 2019. He didn't see the pandemic, but I would have sent him that meme and he would have been like, yep, 100%. He would have been fallen right in line. Like, yes, at one. Definitely.
Yeah.
Side note, I've been trying to make the mayor's coat with all the anchors on it for about 10 years now. And I just I know that just iron-ons, that's all it is.
Right.
But I need, I need to actually do it. But
is it iron-ons?
Yeah, you do.
That's it. Yeah, they've made it with iron-ons.
I did not know that. Wow.
Oh, gosh.
Yep. And, but also, it's like, you know, that's true, but somebody else made the meme of like, well, if this was a zombie movie, we'd be running towards the zombies. Mm-hmm. That's how fucking stupid people.
Oof, you know? Right.
Oh my God. Like, all right, well, you know, I don't know what to tell you. Horror movies have proven that people make terrible decisions in real life just as much as they do in fiction. Suddenly, the final girl running up the stairs instead of out the front door makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny? You guys, in making the Jaws analogy, you actually got me thinking. This is also that whole COVID-19 comparison. That it's pretty much every episode of The Night Stalker.
Yeah, pretty much. It's actually the Night Stalker. It's the Night Stalker. The underlining theme of the Night Stalker is nobody's listening to the guy who's, hey, I saw it. Propaganda. That's that leftist talk.
Right.
You damn.
Don't talk to me about that wokeness. Don't talk to me about that woke stuff.
Now that you mentioned like, that thing,
I just threw a werewolf off a boat. What are you? Yeah,
right. No, right. A vampire sure literally just did, ran buddy. Through your guys. Like,
where's Mulder and Scully when you need them?
Yeah.
Right.
I remember there was, I think it was Michael Dougherty. And this was like right when his Godzilla movie was going to come out or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was like either mm-hmm. right at the start of the pandemic or right before. I don't remember. But he did that like super cut of all of the horror movies where he took like all the things where society's collapsing kind of thing. And he was like, horror fans are ready for this. We've seen this before. And it was like, put MacReady in it from The Thing. And he's just like, nobody trusts anyone anymore. And we're all very tired.
And we're all like, very tired.
That is so true. That is so good.
Oh, man.
Who's the one who was trapped in they locked in what's his name's cabin? Because he was the one to pull the gun out, the doctor, and he was like, "You don't know what's going on around here." I do.
Is that Ed Begley? Yeah, Wilford Brimley.
No, Wilford Brimley.
And then they check on him, and there's a noose. When he's like, "I'm fine.
I'm fine.
I want to come back inside. I want
to come back inside.
Hearing things, funny things out here." It's like, yeah, you're perfectly fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
One of the best horror movies ever.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Far and away.
Movies ever.
So, all right. Mark. So a bunch of us are going. We're going to try to sell some books. We're going to, you know, shake hands, kiss babies.
We're going to StokerCon.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to have, as Rob said offline, we're going to possibly get pretty drunk.
Very drunk.
But
even a question?
But Mark, you actually have something big happening. Mm-hmm. And you should probably tell our listening and viewing audience about it.
Oh, yes. So I will be running a workshop for the Horror University. Oral storytelling techniques in horror.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, for those of you who know and those who don't, I am a Moth Grand Slam storyteller. And I have been doing live storytelling for several years. And one of the things when I was approached about doing something, they didn't know what they wanted me to do. They said, could you come up with something? And one of the things I thought would be wonderful to do is do a workshop showing horror writers the techniques I use as an oral storyteller to apply to both their written and spoken work.
Yes.
So a lot of people just think that when you go to shows like The Moth or you go to a storytelling show, a person just gets up and just rattles off a story off the top of their head. But a lot of times we have these stories already kind of tucked away. We already know if you're in an open mic or if you're on the show,
mm-hmm.
you prepare mm-hmm. the story. So there are things that I do that I'm going to teach people how to apply to when they're working on short stories, novels, and things of that nature. The second half is then how to apply those same techniques to when you read, because what is beginning to happen now is we are at a point where authors are being asked to read their work.
Yeah.
During the pandemic, that was a big thing. People were getting online and maybe charging a little fee to come and hear their favorite author read a chapter from their favorite book or something like that. Mm-hmm. But if you're not used to doing it, this is a way to kind of help you kind of work through maybe some nerves. Maybe you're not sure exactly how to begin, what part mm-hmm. of the story you should start from.
Mm-hmm.
And so the workshop is going to teach people a little bit of everything to kind of get them more comfortable for the transition from just not only being the writer, but also the reader. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping for a good turnout for that. And I'm hoping
I'll be there for sure.
Oh yeah, I know you.
I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah, because so, everything you said is absolutely true. Because when someone asked me to read part of my novel, I was like, "What part do I read? Do I just read the mm-hmm. beginning? Do I read the part with the curse? Do I don't want to give anything away?" And right. I just felt lost. And I was like, "And then I'm just gonna read." No, I don't want to do that. Yeah. So when I saw that you were offering this workshop, I was like, "Yes,
Yeah.
Thank you, so, Professor.
You're welcome. I'm hoping to get a good turnout, and I hope people take something away from it. It's not designed to point a finger and say, you know, you don't know what you're doing. It's basically like, I see you need to figure out how to get from point A to point B. Let me help you. Because at the end of the day, you know, as writers, this is one thing as artists, we don't like to ask for help.
Right.
So a lot of times we just don't want to do it. And maybe this is a way for me to help.
And also, like, not for nothing, but like, even people who are comfortable reading and experienced reading, they could pick up something too.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't just for people like, you know, like I would take that. I might take that. When is it? Saturday morning?
Saturday morning at 11.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how long?
They've got me from 11 to 12:50.
Mm-hmm.
So it's it's almost 2 hours.
And 50 minutes, right? Hour and so, 50 minutes.
Hour and 50 minutes. So so a lot to do in an hour. I mean, believe it or not, that can go very quickly. You could be sitting there and then suddenly you look up and you're like, oh wow, it's over. It's
yeah, time. Just might.
So just, you know, gotta space it out and everything. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Academics on so,
deck. Right?
Mark, I'm curious. Are you going to be calling people up?
You know what? I haven't decided that part yet. Uh-huh. The activity portion of it is going to be a little tricky. Only because it will depend on how many people are there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it will depend on who has something that they want to share.
Sure.
And how we can go about doing that. I don't know if I'm going to do, I'm still kind of on the fence with doing sort of like an, you know, audience kind of saying, hey, this is what I picked up, you know, kind mm-hmm. of a peer kind of evaluation at the end. Right. But, you know, it's still, I have until Saturday. I have almost a week. The workshop itself is together. I have everything I need. It's just now ironing out the smaller portions of it. But there may be a participation portion, giving some people an opportunity to get up. And
you've taught this before, right?
No.
Oh, that's exciting as hell.
No. Yeah. I've not taught it in this expanse. I've done smaller things where I've taught people, given people sort of like how to go about doing storytelling and how to put stories together and everything. And what's unique about this is that you're writing fiction. So you have to kind of approach it a little bit differently. And it is very much a know your audience. You know, mm-hmm. you got to kind of know that when your audience walks through the door, they came to hear a horror story. You know, live storytelling show, and you will hear anything. You know, you might hear something that offends you. You might hear something to make you laugh. But when people walk through the door and they're expecting a horror story and you don't give them a horror story, they'll let you know. So so it's really about, you know, the hard part is, because it's fiction, how to effectively bring people into the story and walk away feeling a certain type of way.
Mm-hmm.
It could also work for poets too, I imagine, right? You know, individuals who write poetry could probably get a lot out of your course too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that for sure.
Yeah. So, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, so I guess at least the three of us need to have something already on hand when we walk in. Because more than likely...
Would he do that to us?
He would do that to you.
The way I know my Mark Abbott. Yeah, actually. I'm not so much worried about me. I'm not even worried about Denise. Yeah. I know who I'm worried about.
You don't know what to worry about me at all, man. I'm going to be high as a motherfucker and I will read that shit like...
Oh my God.
I will take everything he said. I'll be like learning. I'm going to learn it. I'm be like, yeah, I'll do it. I'll be the first one up there.
All right, Rakim.
High as fuck.
I swear to God, if you're asleep, I'm going to wake you up.
Yeah. And
why are you bringing up bullshit? Wait, why are you bringing
Denise, why are you bringing forward shit?
Accident ain't that old.
Because it was hilarious.
It's last year. That's old.
I look over here like,
no, it's not. Tired. We don't know each other. We don't know each other tired. How many years?
We
one
known
year
each other
is for, nothing.
We've known each other so long right now, we both know what the original text of the Ten Commandments was. That's how old we are. All right.
So, I've got 15. Crash.
Right.
Ten commandments.
Mark, that dash and that dot, is that a 10 or a 9? This isn't in Latin. It's in Hebrew. I don't know Hebrew. What is this?
Oh, you see what I have
beautiful.
To put up with,
what
Robert?
Is this stone?
I love it. I listened to the show. I knew what to expect.
It's slate. Well, it's not good. Stone.
See?
Slate.
Once again, oh, academics. These schools are all.
I know, right?
Indeed.
Now it's
indeed.
Theology.
Okay. Now, yeah, right now it's theology.
Yes.
I'm waiting for that dude to come out with some metallurgy, and then we'd be done.
Completely done.
Done.
Well, he can help you, smelt down a sword, I guess.
Great.
I can do that. I can actually do that for y'all.
Oh, okay.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, bring it down.
Nice.
Bring yeah. it down.
So, Stephen, are you? Do you have any seminars for StokerCon?
Yeah. I have panel discussions. I don't exactly have my schedule memorized.
I'm coming to your reading. Know. SVP.
Yes, I have a that. Reading.
Okay.
And
that's why you
I
need
have...
to take my class.
Yeah, we'll do that. I'll take the class first and then run to my reading.
To the reading.
Look what I learned from Mark, everybody.
do you have something, Robert?
I'm a big boy now. But yeah, so I do have a reading. Yeah, I have a diversity and horror panel. Big surprise there. I have... So James was nice enough to invite me to be on the panel for the 50th anniversary Night Strangler.
Oh, Night Strangler.
The Night Strangler. So let me try to explain. So, of course, everybody remembers the original Night Stalker movie. Mm-hmm. At least everybody on this panel will remember that. Mm-hmm. where they introduce Janos Skorzeny as a vampire stalking around, I think that was Las Vegas, if I'm not entirely
yes. No, you're right.
So. Vegas. Kolchak kind of gets a sequel movie that I don't know is nearly as popular as the first one, but of course, then there's the whole series that follows this movie, but this mm-hmm. is set in Seattle, and it's... The villain is played by Richard Anderson, if I'm remembering that properly.
Oh, and wow.
Richard Anderson used to be Oscar on The $6 Million Man. And he plays this guy who's kind of an alchemist that's been keeping himself alive since the 1800s by killing, I think it's 6 women
mm-hmm.
at a time, and then he disappears for another 21 years. Does it again, disappears for another 21 years.
Yeah.
Mm.
Kolchak, in the middle of the screaming matches with Tony Vincenzo, his editor. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny how they both ended up relocated to Seattle for this one.
Right.
But it's like, I almost feel like there's a couple of directors, you know, as my stage managing life goes, there's a couple of directors who I end up kind of paired up with over the course of my time doing that. So it's kind of relatable for me that way. But between the screaming matches, he kind of figures out what the villain is doing. And it's the same kind of thing. The police are trying to squash the whole thing. They're trying to, you know, change what information is going out to the public. And Kolchak in his, you know, misshapen stance kind of way, he finds himself confronted alone with the monster.
Oh, goodness.
So it's that whole Bugs Bunny having redisposed of the monster.
Right.
I exit through the the funny thing is, it's not even my most favorite thing out of the whole the whole kit and caboodle of the Night Stalker in the series and whatever. I mean, you know, because there's so much more shouting than anything else, and just the arguing between those two.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty suspenseful, and it's fun. It's a fun watch, you know, as long as you keep in mind this is like a 70s thing and it's retro.
Yeah.
The wild thing about it is I think James Chambers, our, you know, head of
Fearless Leader.
Fearless Leader of the New York chapter. He's kind of making it up to me, because what ended up happening, and it's not really his place to make it up to me, but because this is completely my fault and the fault of Delta Airlines. I was supposed to, in last StokerCon, to be on the Night Stalker panel, and Delta Airlines basically jacked me up to the point where, like, I had to fly to Atlanta first.
Yeah.
And that was only after I really kind of like stood there and stamped my feet a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, I don't know when I would have got to Denver, which
they gave him the Indiana Jones route.
Basically.
Right.
So missed that panel completely and felt really bad, because I mean, honestly, I went through, as a kid, I went through great pains to watch the Night Stalker series. And by great pains, I mean, you know, you had to stay up, wait till your mom went to work, because she worked nights.
Oh.
Make it was sure ABC my, too, right? It was on ABC.
Oh, yeah. Make sure stepfather was good and drunk, which he usually was, and then managed to sneak out, get to the TV, you know, in the middle of the night, watch a Night Stalker. Of course, I also watched a heap of other things, Twilight Zone, Don Kirshner's rock concert, and all this other old people shit.
Wow. Yeah.
But, you know, that was like a big thing. Like, you know, I used to like fantasize about being a black version of Kolchak. I don't know how that would necessarily have played out, other than, you know, what are you talking about?
I'm
chasing the monster, but the cops are chasing me.
Yeah.
Even more so because, hey, where's he going?
Right.
I would have had to wear the same hat just to kind of hide out.
You'd have an episode called Ballad of the Drip King.
Oh my god.
You'd be so tight. Your outfits would be so tight. Motherfuckers would think you're a pimp and not a journalist.
Right. Stars.
And there it is.
Yeah. And you'd
and
have
it in a nutshell.
And literally like half your check would have to go to a police officer that you can trust, because there'd be nobody else you could.
Yeah.
So yeah, it would be one of the better series I think that would ever come out on Netflix or Amazon. I'd watch that shit every night.
Right.
And you know what's funny, as you bring that up, I remember because, you know, TV shows back in the day, they, no matter how white they would be normally, they'd always have a black episode.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The zombie episode, right, exactly. And think about that. We had, in that zombie episode, you had Antonio Fargas.
Mm-hmm.
Moses Gunn in that? Moses Gunn was in
that. Now I gotta backtrack. Yeah. Now I gotta backtrack on that one. But yeah, you had all these, like, you know, 70s sitcom folks in this one Kolchak.
Oh gosh.
Oh yeah, that was so crazy. Then watching the stuff over as an adult, then that's when you realize that the Mummy episode stars none other than Eric Estrada. You know, and that's the thing. I could talk about this show like for 3 hours. And so here I am missing the damn panel. I was hotter than fish grease, sitting in the Atlanta airport, like, God damn it.
Yeah. It took you like a whole day just to get there. Yeah.
It did.
That was crazy.
I remember we were all texting you like, mm-hmm. you're
yeah. yeah. That was crazy.
Yeah. yeah.
Wait, do you remember the reboot Night Stalker with Gabriel Union?
Mm-hmm. Gabriel Union and what was it?
Stuart Townsend.
No, was it Stuart Townsend? The guy
it
from
was. Home? The guy that played Lestat in Queen of the Damned.
And Dorian Gray in
and Dorian Gray, yes. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. That's right.
Yep. Yeah,
and haven't seen much of him since, right? Or am I missing something?
No, I haven't seen him either.
Yeah.
He used up all of his goodwill.
Probably. Yeah. Either that, I found his painting. They actually found his painting. Ding. Yeah. So you want to go bang everybody else in the city, but you don't want to bang me no more, huh? Well, I see your favorite painting is over here. I guess you don't need it no more. No, not the painting.
Not the painting.
One day I'm gonna ask them to let me do. You know how they do those midnight readings and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Robert, I wrote this piece called "The Yard Sale of Dorian Gray."
Oh wow!
Yes,
which was about Dorian Gray comes home from a late night, and he gets to his house, and all of these people are in his yard, and his mother's selling all of his stuff.
Oh no!
Because she wants him out of the house, like for dirt, you know, mom, she's selling it for dirt cheap, and he finally gets to the point where he's like, mom, have you been keeping a track of what you've been selling? She goes, yeah. And he goes, what have you sold so far? And she's like, well, I sold some canes. I saw some of your hats. I sold some of your suits and this ghastly painting that was in the attic. And he's like, you sold the painting? She goes, well, I it was just the ugliest thing I've ever seen. She goes, I don't even know why you kept it. And he goes, well, who did you sell it to?
Right.
She's like, well, I have no idea. The guy came up.
Oh no.
He goes, I couldn't really see his face because he was all bandaged up, but he said he was a doctor and he wanted it. So I sold it to him. And the very last scene is the invisible man sitting in his office staring at the picture, and you see like this floating cigarette being smoked, and he goes, Picasso my ass. And it's like,
Gosh, where can we find that short story?
It was a script. It was a script that I had written. It was that and how Jonathan Harker, it was two of them. It was Jonathan Harker gets Dracula and Dr. Frankenstein show up at his office to scream at him because he sold Castle Dracula to Frankenstein and told Frankenstein that nobody lived there. And then in the middle of his experiments, Dracula woke up and started unplugging everything.
Right.
And then Dracula shows up and he's like, I told you to rent my place as a summer house. And this guy shows up and he's like, he's been in the catacombs digging up parts from my family and trying to do this whole. So this back and forth with him. Like, he's basically the real estate agent to, like, all the monsters.
That's so cool.
I love that.
Hey, quick question. Hey, Robert, do you have any panels going on or any?
I do, yeah.
What you doing on there?
On Friday morning, which is the morning after the karaoke night that we're putting together, Thursday night karaoke. Friday morning, I'm moderating the video games and horror panel.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
What time?
That's at 9 a.m.
Okay.
1 hour before I arrive.
Yes.
That's going to be a cool one. And then, I have the Mass author signing from 5 to 6 that same night. Then Saturday morning at 10 a.m. I have a reading, with some other cool folks, RJ Joseph, who's also nominated. She's on that reading as well. Mm-hmm. And then 11 a.m., I'm the moderator for Youthful Frights, The Importance of YA and Middle Grade Horror.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
That sounds good.
Wow. Okay.
I'm excited for that one.
I'm definitely going to check that one. Yeah, good I got to check that one.
So, Rob, scariest video game ever in your experience.
Yeah.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
I got to go Silent Hill 2. Is probably the scariest of all time. Just it's not like I was thinking about it today because I watched a super cut on YouTube of like the best jump scares in video games, and I was like, all right, these are just jump scares, you know, like it's just like there's nothing really to it. And then I was thinking, like, well, what's the important thing about horror in video games? And it's more about the horror that stays with you and like always in the back of your mind kind of thing. Like the second I see fog rolling in, I'm like, Silent Hill. going to Silent Hill right okay. now. Like, we wow. are fucked. So, Silent Hill 2, mostly because it's the things that it deals with are very, they feel very human. And the overall story of, like, a man dealing with guilt over something that happened to his wife who passed away, that's very real.
Yeah.
And all of the people who are in that game, all the other supporting characters and stuff, all have very real, very fucked up things that either they've done or have happened to them. Mm. It just feels very honest. So it's I got to go Silent Hill 2.
Silent Hill. Wow.
Mark.
Oh, it's a game I never finished. Mm-hmm. The Evil Within.
Yeah.
Oof.
That was the first video game I played, because I played all of the Resident Evils and everything else. But that game, I bought it. I started playing. 3 weeks went by, and I couldn't figure out, like, every time I came home, I got ready to start, and I was like, nah, I'll wait till later. And I couldn't figure out why. It was scaring me. That's why I was scared. Wow. I was scared to play. And then I got enough nerve to get into it and start playing. And then I just got to a part of the game where it just became, it was too much for me in terms of playing a game. I was like, I can't do this. This is, and I walked away from, I never finished it. I couldn't bring myself to finish the game. And it was just, like Robert said, it stayed with me. And I was like, wow, that's odd for me. You know, it takes a lot to disturb me.
Wow. It's funny too, because that's the same director as the Resident Evil games. Same director.
Oh wow.
Okay.
I had a thing like that with there's a Slender Man video game called The Eight Pages.
Really?
My god, it's so good. I would play it, I would get to a certain point, and I would be like, I'm good, I gotta put this away. and then video game nights with my boys back in the day before they all started having kids. We used to bring all of our Xboxes, and we'd have like 5 TVs set up. It was great. And one night we just weren't playing something together. We were all playing an individual thing. And I was like, I'm going to play the Slender Man game so you guys can see what it's like. And I beat it with them there because I wasn't terrified.
Strength of numbers. Strength of numbers.
Yeah.
Strength of numbers. Really, yeah, totally.
It's really good. I recommend it. It's got to be cheap. I think it's even on Apple or like iPhone and stuff too. Like, it's a pretty cheap game.
Wow.
Denise, Kirk, anything?
Not me. I don't have time for video games. I wish I did.
Yeah. Me too.
But like, my characters are screaming at me, so I'm working that second novel and short stories.
The actual thing we're supposed to be doing, which is
sometimes it'll be
writing horror stuff.
Actually, well, I'm trying to read. You know. Yeah.
Let me ask Robert. Did you play The Last of Us?
No, I don't like that studio. I don't like the games that they make. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow. Not a fan.
Break it down. Why?
Ooh, what? I love it.
Build a team, man. Why?
I think they're boring. I think like they lean really heavily into like snarky characters, like in Uncharted, stuff like that. And it's like, you know, and they turn that into a movie, which I'm sure was wonderful. But like, it just leaves me cold. <He didn't know. laughs> But no, my wife watched the Last of Us show, and I was like, did you like it? And she was like, yeah, I liked it. I was like, good enough for me. Like, I'm not. I should play it. I shouldn't be a snob. I should play it. I hear it's really good.
The story
you
is...
You can be a snob if you want to.
The story is good.
Thank you.
You'd enjoy the story. I mean, there were moments in the game that they did on the show. Like, as we were all watching the show, because I had played the game, there was this one episode that I was like, oh god, this is gonna be, because in the game it wasn't so much scary, but it's a scene where you're trying to get around in the snow.
I heard about that part.
And they're hunting you in the snow, and it was just like, oh, you gotta be kidding me, they're gonna do this episode. So I enjoyed the game. I didn't realize it was the same. You're more into the studios and stuff like that in terms of the game. So
there's like, it's weird. So like, I watched a video game presentation today because Xbox just unveiled all their like, this is what we have coming. And it's like, there wasn't anything that moved the needle for me at all. And I felt bad because it's like, I really would like to get back hardcore into gaming. Like when I was in college, I used to play Street Fighter Alpha 3 semi-professionally. Like I would go to like these warehouse parties that Capcom would throw in Manhattan and Brooklyn and on Long Island and stuff. And I'd be like, yeah, I'll play Street Fighter and make like $100 for the night. Like, cool, you know, but like that, you know, I used to be so into it. And then I was into this other game that came out, not like 2015, called Overwatch. And I was like, so hardcore. Oh, yeah. Overwatch was dope. That was the first time I actually, I went to, this is so super nerdy.
Well, you're on the right podcast.
Welcome to the show. That's true.
They have a thing called Overwatch League, where the, all these teams from all over the world play like professionally against each other. It's like esports. And they had the finals at the Barclays the first year, the inaugural year of the Overwatch League. And I was like, I'm fucking going. And so I went. And it was the coolest thing ever. I got to see DJ Khaled be awful live.
Awful live.
It was the worst thing I ever
I have also experienced that in a different setting, but yeah.
DJ Khaled, you're awful. You suck. God.
Terrible. But it was a cool event, and I used to be like so into it, and I would love to get like back into it. But again, same thing like Denise said, like I just don't have the time to dedicate to the games like I used to.
Yeah.
And you know, like I'm constantly banging away at like something that I'm writing, or I'm like working. And now that it's summer, school year's over, thank God.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah,
you know, I'm still gonna be teaching driver's ed this summer, so that's gonna take a
yeah, driver's ed,
like to live
good
dangerously.
Good luck, Godspeed.
Generation Alpha. Is that
God? Is that where we're on now?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And all right. So, what's scarier, The Last of Us or teaching a teenager how to drive?
Depends on the teenager.
I guess it depends on the teenager. There you
good
go.
Answer. Yep. That's that's true.
Holy shit!
Oh, wow. I had one really great kid. He was like a homeschool kid, and he was like super mature, super smart, but like also preposterously funny. And like,
oh wow,
we just bonded like right away. And it was me, him, and we had three girls in the car. And the girls were all like, is he your son? And I'm like, no, he's not my son. He's just very funny. He's funnier than I am, so he's not my son. So like,
but I'm kidnapping him. Yeah.
He's a really good driver. Like everything that I taught him, like he picked up really quick. He drove a lot with his parents, stuff like that. He was just really good. And the girls were great too. In my experience, my women's students are vastly superior to my men students across the board in driver's ed.
Look at Denise. Yeah,
like, it's like head and shoulders. It's preposterous. Yeah. Like, so this kid, he and I kept like, he was like, hey, Mr. O, I watched The Bourne Supremacy the other day. He does something really cool in New York on like a car chase scene. And I was like, are you talking about the Jason Bourne power slide? And he was like, yeah, how'd you know? And I was like, dude. So I taught him how to do it. Like I taught him the logistics of how to do it.
Right.
Just like in verbally.
Right.
And then on the very last day of class, he was driving last and I was like, do you want to do an actual Jason Bourne power slide?
What?
And he was like, can I? And I was like, girls, make sure you're buckled.
Right. Buckle your belts, baby.
So the kid's driving, he gets the car up to like 95 and then he pulls the e-brake, swerves and does perfect. It was perfect.
My God.
I started clapping. I was like, pull over. We both got out of the car. We hugged and high-fived. I was like, that was the coolest shit I've ever experienced as a teacher.
Wow.
Tokyo Drift.
Yes. That's bananas.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God.
That's
Professor, awesome. Professor O and the Tokyo Drift.
That's a title you can take.
That's a Saturday morning cartoon right there.
Yeah,
it really is. It really is. Oh my God.
That'll probably be an episode of Big O. Big O versus Dr. O, Tokyo Drift.
Oh my stars.
You're an animated character, baby. You're an animated character.
That I have a question for Robert. What was your gateway horror?
Oof. Yeah. Probably, it was probably like either The Thing from Another World, so the original The Thing, or it was probably, it was either that or it was Godzilla 85. It's either, I think Godzilla 85.
Wow.
Or 89, yeah. Whatever, whichever one it was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which like is burned into my memory of like, there's a part on a boat and you see him like right there and it's like pants shittingly scary. but it was one of those. And then I have to say it was like Halloween. Cause like, I remember watching Halloween when I was like six and my parents, my dad was like, yeah, let's watch this movie. It's a wholesome for the whole family. And you know, threw that on. And we just, my parents like didn't shy away from the horror, like showing me horror. Like, it's like what I watched all the time. Like, one of the first comic books I ever drew as a kid was The Breakfast Club Meets Dracula.
Oh, wow.
So, like, that was like a vibe I was really into. I was like, ooh, this is fun.
Yeah. I guess that's plausible if you're stuck there till nightfall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole thing was they forgot that they were
like,
there.
Yeah, I'm going to show you motherfuckers.
It was like a Home Alone. Like a Home Alone detention. I wish I could find it.
Right.
I would love to read that.
Yeah. I'll read that.
I'll write it just for fun. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, I guess, so the funny thing about that is, you know, if he gets Judd Nelson's character first, the rest is a wash, because not like anybody else in that whole team had hands or anything, you know?
Like... Right, right.
Well, Emilio Estevez's character.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was an athlete.
Yeah, he was an athlete. Yeah,
but he wasn't very smart.
Yeah. See, yeah. Exactly.
Well, he's the one. He's the one who beat Judd Nelson's character. He one got him in a grip and
oh yeah, he sure did.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's
he
true,
did
yeah.
beat him.
Yeah.
So he knows the locks and the grips and the moves for a wrestler. So he'd probably be the hardest one. He beat if he was the first one to get, then yeah. Everybody, like you said, everybody was a wash.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But if he got Molly, like who? All right. So who would be the final girl then? Molly Ringwald's character
or Ally Sheedy?
Ally Sheedy. Yeah. Ally Sheedy.
And if you want to switch it up, it'd be Molly.
Yeah.
Because
Sheedy's like Ringwald, half a goth but... anyway in that movie.
Right.
So...
Right.
But nowadays we all would expect that from Ally. You're right. We'd expect Ally Sheedy to be the final girl.
That's true.
But if you want to play with the genre, just play with the genre and switch it up.
Mm-hmm.
And you make it you either make it Molly or you make it the nerdy kid.
Anthony Michael Hall, yeah.
Then you make it Anthony Michael Hall as the final
girl. He didn't do well against Michael Myers, but he might do better against
right. He might surprise everybody. He's a surprise the surprise ending.
Actually, he could because do you remember why he was in detention?
Yeah.
Oh shit. Didn't he like bring a gun to school?
He bought not just any gun. Do you remember what kind of gun he had? It was a flare gun.
Right.
Because it went off in his locker.
Oh my
That's
God.
Exactly. So he knows how to use a flare gun, at least.
Oh he might still God. Have a flare, an extra flare in that locker. He might be the only one who remembers. I have a flare in my locker.
Wait a minute.
Motherfucker.
Sets Dracula on fire at the end of the movie.
That's the end.
Maybe. Right. All right.
Holy cow.
Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And right. Put to celluloid or whatever we do these days.
The streaming services.
Services that aren't paying their writers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On that note, real quick, I'm wondering if the answer is for everybody to just cancel their Netflix subscription.
I don't even have Netflix.
Well,
neither do I.
There you go.
I don't either. Right. What about you two? What about you all three?
Well, I look
at, hey, Mark, what are you looking at, Mark?
I'm sorry, what was the question again?
Rob and I already divested from Netflix.
Already divested. Listen to
this. Divested.
It's like South Africa all over again.
I can quit whenever I want to.
I totally believe you. Totally believe you.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so my problem, see, I guess I'm part of the problem in my own way, but it's like I share my account with my mother, so if I
off.
Cut it, and that's the thing. I freely admit that, you know, me sharing that Netflix account with my mother is literally so she has something other to watch than the news. Because if she watches the news, then right. I get the oh my god, there's a man on the subway. Mm-hmm. Are you? Where are you? You know, and I get I get all these phone calls.
Right, and then and then next time we do the show, Steve is on Percocet.
Right. He might be on it right now.
Right. Well, Steve, are you okay, man? No, I'm fine.
You all right?
Yep. Okay. Don't underestimate.
No, his mother will be on the show. Right. Be-
Are you all using sunblock? Yeah, yeah.
Yes, no, dude, Steve's mom.
We want to open up that can of worms. I like her having Netflix.
Right.
You know, and even if every once in a while I got to field like some really like awkward question about Grace and Frankie. You know, whatever.
She watches Grace and Frankie.
They're selling dildos. Like, oh, fuck. Just when I thought those two were going to be like a safe distraction.
So, so for Steve, it's a mental health choice, actually. Netflix is a mental health choice.
Yeah.
I made an account. The only one that I pay for is HBO. Oh, I'm sorry, Max. I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah, Max. Because that made sense.
Dumbest fucking name ever. But yeah, let's just throw away 40 years of history. That's fine. Right. But like, right. I made my mother an account on our Max account. Mm-hmm. And every time I visit her, which was I literally visited her today, she's a commercial for Max. And she goes, do I have that? Like, I wrote down.
My dad does that too.
Like, what the fuck? Like, I literally wrote it down.
My dad does
your name on it. And I gave you a cute picture. Like,
yes,
you know, it's
yes. Same with my dad.
Rob. Dad. Let me just preface this now. That means nothing.
I know.
That means nothing.
You could have drawn a nice little picture of Rocky and Bullwinkle, and you know, with a big old Max on it, and it means nothing.
Yeah,
means
she won't know.
Nothing.
Yeah.
One. Year
I even have it on my dad's phone. My dad has like all the apps on his phone. I logged in while I was at his house. Here you go. So you're plugged in. You're good to go. And still, do I have that? Yes, Dad.
Oh my God.
Yes, you do. He loves the CBS. He watches NCIS all day, every day.
I asked my mom today because I told her she didn't know about the writer's strike. And right. I said to her, I was like, what scripted television do you watch? And she was like, well, I watch Stargate. On this channel. I was like, Stargate? That shit hasn't been on since 2004. Wow. I love it. I love Stargate. And I was like, Mom, new shows. What new shows do you watch? And she's like, oh, well, The Walking Dead.
Wow. I
was like, okay, so she watches all the Deads.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, Mom, you might not have those come the fall or the spring, whenever they're supposed to come back, because of this. And I told her like what was going on. And she was like, oh my God, that's awful. Why are they not paying them enough? And I was like, oh, Mom, if only you knew. if only I could explain it well enough.
You should just say capitalism.
Yeah.
Late stage capitalism. It's the system we grew up in.
I love the fact that, because my mother did that once. She called me. She goes, I just saw this movie. You should really see this. It I thought it was a crime drama, and then it just turned into a horror film. I was like, well, what movie was it? She goes, From Dusk Till Dawn. And I'm like,
oh my God,
watching From Dusk Till Dawn.
Right.
And then of course she gets on this one, because you know, once you reach a certain age, your parents forget now that you're old enough.
Yeah.
Now there's no filter. So she's like, and the guy outside the club. The little Spanish guy that just started. I was like, Mom, don't say it. I know the part you're talking about. She goes, but he kept saying it. I know, Mom. I know.
Like, Mom, I've seen this movie 21 years ago.
Right.
But glad you're entertaining yourself, Mom.
Right.
But that was her thing. Right. I was like, so the violence and the vampire and people being ripped apart wasn't the problem. It was this man. Right.
Hey Mark, be glad she did not know who Cheech was, because if she knew who Cheech was, that means she used to watch Cheech and Chong. and that means you can never leave Cosette with her.
Oh wow.
I love when people discover old movies and they want to talk about it's like cute, but it's also like, oh, I'm prepared for this conversation.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, you finally watched Heat. That's right. Great. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, you finally found 3 hours to watch one of the greatest crime dramas of all time. Fabulous. Let's talk.
So that speaking cool, of our cool. our parents, speaking of our parents in horror, I made the most egregious mistake of all time. In terms of, I think I told Mark the story already, which is why he's laughing. So when Black Mirror first came out,
mm-hmm. ooh,
everybody I know was like, oh yeah, that's right up your alley. That's, oh my God, you're going to love this. You got this goes on for, I don't know, weeks.
All the straights. Telling
yeah.
you like
yeah.
yeah. right right
yeah. you'll like this show. What if exactly. technology was bad?
now just remember I said I share the account with my mother.
Yeah. Oh no.
Thanksgiving.
Perfect time.
I pop in, we have a little something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
I sit down on the couch. Because
mm-hmm.
we're having quality time before I leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, well, you know, these people have been talking to me about Black Mirror, so maybe I'll just turn this on.
Oh, click, click, no. Click.
And as you all look horrified.
Horrified. Oh, my God.
That's because you're realizing that I sat there and watched the very first episode of Black Mirror with my... I'm not going to say her age, but, you know, this very somewhat of a churchgoer, older Black woman.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That gave birth to me some odd years ago. Sitting there next to her while we watch this story about somebody being kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a ransom. That was, you know, like, well, let the thing was a princess, right?
Yeah.
We'll let her go if the prime minister has sex with a pig yep. on live TV.
Oh, my God. Oh, no.
And I'm sitting there, and it's Thanksgiving, and I remember when it was over,
mm-hmm.
my mother just said, well, that wasn't really a holiday.
No. Did you guys have like, ham?
Right.
Let's up for right. Exactly. Let's up for some ham.
Oh my so, stars. Yeah.
I pretty much, unless it's a Marvel movie, I pretty much stop watching things, pulling it, or at least, you know. Because of course, Black Mirror has stuff that's way less grotesque in that way,
right?
And way more thought provoking and mm-hmm. and really cool. It, like pretty much any other episode of Black Mirror would have been fine, except the one that I ended up watching with her.
On Thanksgiving, right?
On Thanksgiving, no less.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my stars!
No Thanksgiving, no less.
Wow.
So, yeah.
You didn't even do like, oh, I'm tired. Let's watch this later. I would have been. Right. Yeah, I would have got out of it.
Yeah, man.
No, you're because like... you know what? In all honesty, I was like, they're not gonna go through with this.
Man.
My dumb ass literally said to myself, "Dad, they're not gonna go through with this. This is silly. What do you mean? What do you mean he's gonna stop?" And it wasn't until it was actually happening, I was like, "So they're going through with this."
Yeah, I think you got like an old movie in your Rolodex, like, "Hey, mom, Seven Brides or Seven Brothers is on instead. You want to watch that?"
Right.
I do that shit all the time. My mom asked me about, like, you know, Seven Brides or Seven Brothers is on. She's like, "Oh, I love
it's
that
on right now."
Right, yeah. Right. My Fair Lady's on, Mom. Yeah.
Yeah, let's watch that.
Barbara Streisand. Yeah, I'll watch that with you, Mom.
But she just likes all that stuff. So anyway, oh yeah, you know, that's what happened to me.
That's a nightmare. Wow.
Yeah. Pretty awkward.
And I say that should make it into anybody's story here on this panel. Anybody's short story should use that. That's the beginning of a story. On Thanksgiving, my mom wanted to watch a horror sci-fi, and I didn't have the heart or remember that she doesn't like, she can watch other movies.
Oh, no. And that's the thing. She's actually kind of signed off. I think I was also kind of in a, yeah, mom, you need to toughen up a little bit mode. And but not knowing we were going with the whole pig thing. I think what happened, to be honest with you, because my mother, you know, we've all got that little connection with our parents and TV watching and doing all that stuff together as kids and whatever. But she started me off, you know, with like Christopher Lee movies and stuff like that. She's been in that big Peter Cushing fan.
Oh, okay.
She really was. She signed out at Salem's Lot.
Oh.
He signed out at Salem's Lot, looking at the Glick boy scratching at the window. Outside of reading my stuff, nothing after that.
Yeah.
She's done.
Wow.
Really done.
That makes sense. So, I buy that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, because Mark has talked about this sometimes. You see certain kinds of movies and kids are threatened. And as a father, he's like, ugh, what the fuck? You know?
Damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that might have been her signing out. Hey, Rob.
Yes.
Before we go, why don't you talk about your social media and all that stuff? Because you've been a great guest, and I'm sure other people will want to contact you, look up your books, especially The Vile Thing Recreated.
Yeah.
Which is like blowing up Amazon.
Nice.
Congratulations.
Hit us with some social media.
Thank you.
And some stuff so people can find you.
Yeah, you could find me on Twitter and Instagram at Robert Ottone, RobertOttone. You could find me on TikTok, but I don't love TikTok, at Robert_P_Ottone. I don't know why I'm on there. And you could find The Vile Thing We Created anywhere. You can go to your favorite bookstore and, you know, ask them to get it. You can get it on the Amazon. Get it at your favorite bookstore and then review it on Amazon. That's what I say.
That's the move.
All right. That's a good idea. So, folks, we are all Pittsburgh bound. And I got to say, I'm happy about that. It's going to be fun. Fun. I'm sorry. Denise, what do you have lined up in Pittsburgh?
Oh, this year I'm actually not on any panels, so I'm going to try to visit all your panels instead, as well as take some other things to help strengthen my writing even more than it already is. Yeah.
Aha.
Yeah.
Awesome. Very good.
I do have a recorded reading. It's okay. After I read a section like 7 different times, I'm like, okay, this is it. It's online. Good luck. I hope you like it. Yeah. So I really need Mark's class.
Yes. But once you finish with Shaolin Abbott, you would be good to go.
Academics.
For sure. With the professor.
Academics.
Academics on set.
Academics.
All right. Well.
Yeah. I look forward to seeing a Linda Addison too.
Oh my God. I cannot wait to meet Linda face to face. I'm going to give her the biggest hug. Oh my God.
Stand in line, brother. Stand in line.
Right? I love her. Yeah.
She is so wonderful.
When I got the blurb from her for The Vile Thing We Created, I actually cried.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hear that. Nah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love her.
I hear that.
She's incredible.
She is. And I believe she's there, right?
She'll be there. Oh, yeah. She's definitely going. Yeah.
All right.
You're teaching after I am.
Yeah.
Whoa. Oh, cool.
Whoa. Yeah.
Oh, my God. We're gonna become the greatest horror writers of all time.
Yay!
And on that note, I just want to say thank you, everybody who listened to all these little anecdotes and silliness and a little bit of the wisdom, and of course, you know, some great things from Mr. Abbott. We are looking forward to discussing that further. Rob, thank you so much for spending some of your Sunday evening with us.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. So, for Mark Abbott, Denise Tapscott, and Kirk Johnson, I'm Stephen Van Patten, and this has been an hour of your life you're not getting back.